If you want to get your favorite technical news, give the Gizmo Gang a call. Gizmo
Hey, and welcome to Gizmo Sapien Show 195. I'm Chris, and with me today is...
I am Matt.
And we're going to talk about Christmas tech. So, I know Matt's going to be just all over this episode. But there's some funny things that are happening that always happen at the end of the year end. You know, Apple usually releases a slew of products, which, you know, they did that through October and November. They actually shipped their brand new MacBook Pros with their new Pro M1 Pro and M1 Max chips. Phenomenal products, but we're still seeing some announcements being made through the end of the year, which is kind of funny because most people want to be like Apple and do their announcements so that they can get the Christmas revenue for their products. Well, we're going to talk about some things that are going on that the companies in question will not see their revenue until sometime in 2022. Now, I think part of this is just because of the supply chain issues and chip shortages. Tim Cook is considered the world industry leader in logistics and supply chain, and that's why Apple gets their stuff out when everybody else is having issues, because they think, you know, if you think of it as a chess game, they're not just 2 to 3 moves ahead, they're 4 to 5 moves ahead of everybody else. So we'll move into this. Microsoft is releasing another version of Windows 11 called, well, so they're calling it Windows 11 SE, and it's their education edition, and it rivals Chrome OS in the education market. It is a limited version of Windows. You can only install applications from the App Store. Only so many applications will run. I think that's largely, or will run simultaneously, and the idea is that some apps won't run at all because they're distraction apps. So don't look for this to be like to play, you know, low-end games or anything on. It's going to be Office 365 and educational products that Microsoft, I'm assuming, is trying to work deals with all the educational software publishers through their App Store. It's supposed to have tools so that it can be integrated into a school environment and be managed by the school and things like that. So on top of that, as part of rolling out the Surface or Windows 11 SE, they've created the Surface SE, which is their educational flagship product at a whopping $259. It's been largely criticized because it diminishes the Surface brand, which is, you know, the Surface has always been the rival to Apple's high-end laptops. And it's a product that's only available to educational customers. You have to, they list a number of resellers who are selling it, but you have to be like with a school district, and you have to buy, I'm assuming you're going to have to buy at least 10, if not more in volume, to even get the product. But where people will probably likely see this product is OEMs are getting the Windows 11 SE product. So, you know, your Dells, your HPs, your Acers, your Asus, they're going to be able to get that Windows 11 SE product in early 2022. So assuming they can get hardware out the door and into consumers' hands, you will be able to probably buy a Windows 11 SE product just like you can buy a Chromebook, because the OEMs are going to do like, they're going to exercise their contracts with Best Buy and other electronic stores to distribute these so that kids can come in and parents don't feel like they're spending a ton of money on a $200 laptop, but it runs Windows, which they're familiar with, as opposed to Chrome OS. There's a whole bunch of flaws to this whole plan. One, economically, this is a drive to the bottom type solution. How cheap can we get it, you know, so that people, if it gets destroyed, people don't feel like they've invested a ton of money? Or how can we get it schools to buy, you know, hundreds of these or thousands of these across the school district for use? The problem is you're battling an uphill entrenched market with two major players. Google with the Chromebooks and Apple with the iPad. And even though the iPad is a little more, well, it's not just a little more, it's more, it's a premium device. Apple has brought the iPad for education down to $329 a unit, with the ability to use the Apple Pencil and keyboard and mouse support. And then you have Google, and they have a whole ecosystem of Chrome devices that you can buy either personally or through existing contracts that a lot of the OEMs have through school. When my son was going through school, the school district where he went, you paid, you know, when you paid your school fees over a 2-year period, you got an HP Chromebook as part of it. Now, he was a Mac user. He also has his Linux laptop. I mean, he's always been a techie, so he didn't really use that device a whole lot, but he had it, and it was part of the thing. This is, Microsoft is really late to the game, in my opinion, on this. And it's even though they're going to try to tout their dominance in the business space, which isn't quite dominant anymore, I think this is more of a knee-jerk reaction to Chrome trying to move into the business space than it is Microsoft having a real interest in the education space. Because the reality of it is Chrome runs Android apps. And today, almost all Chromebooks run Android apps. And it is not the operating system that business users care about. It is actually Microsoft Office, which they've standardized on for 30 or 40 years, that they care about. And you can get Microsoft Office on Macs and Windows and Android. And probably if Microsoft, the Microsoft Office business unit, who is separate from the Windows operating system business unit, is smart, they will start releasing Office 365 on Android. They already have web versions, so why wouldn't they make it? Because there's a lot more companies who are using Linux in their environments, particularly scientific companies where you have researchers and technical people who are familiar with Linux because they need it for their research, but also need Office and might want something that's as good as LibreOffice is, which it is an excellent product, might want something that is supported through Microsoft so that they're compatible with as many people as possible. And I know I'm going to get some criticism that, well, LibreOffice is just as compatible. And as far as I know, it truly is. Where it's limited and where most companies are limited is when it comes to, like, it's one application within the Office suite, and that's a spreadsheet. Now, Apple has done a lot of work to make numbers even more robust on both iOS and on Mac, since they give that away as part of the operating, you know, with the operating system on any new product. So there's becoming less dependence on Excel, but in most places, Excel is the de facto standard spreadsheet. The only time you need something, a lot of people need something more than Excel, they need something like Tableau, which is a data analytics tool, which acts and operates like a beefed up version of Excel, but then gives you a lot of visualization capabilities to show what the data can, you know, what you can do with the data. Thoughts, Matt?
Well, you and I have always had this discussion about how Microsoft is really a software company that's trying to do hardware, and it has never done it well.
Well, I won't totally disagree with you, but I do believe that their normal
Surface
it has done really well, and the Xbox is a fairly good piece of hardware. But you're right. You know, their approach early on, which was, we're going to make a general purpose operating system that runs on anything that's x86, has left them being kind of mediocre at what they do. You know, the only reason the Surface is so good is because it's their hardware. So Microsoft's not dependent on third-party OEMs developing drivers to support their product.
Exactly. I think Microsoft kind of missed the boat. They should have been thinking about creative destruction much sooner than they have.
Yeah.
Now they're at a point where they've gambled that there wouldn't be another product that would supplant them. And now that something has,
well, it's not.
They either have.
It's not just one product anymore either. Now it's they're getting hit on multiple fronts.
They have to adapt.
Yeah.
Or die, and I don't care which one it is. But Microsoft needs to do one or the other. Yeah. They need to adapt or die.
Well, I've always said the things that Microsoft is best at has been Microsoft Exchange.
Yeah.
There's really not an equivalent groupware server except Exchange. I mean, you could argue early on, you know, like Novell NetWare, IBM had their suite, but Exchange was so much better in many respects. There were some respects where it was worse, but was so much better that they lived through it, and they're kind of the de facto leader of it. I think Office has been a strong product for them. I think it's a little bloaty at this point, but
it is the industry standard.
It is the industry standard. And I think they did really, really well. And I think part of the reason they did really, really well is because they allowed the Xbox division to be totally separate. Is they did really, really well with the Xbox and the Xbox hardware and software. Even though it runs a version of Windows, it is so much more stable. But again, that goes back to, I'm not depending on a third-party OEM to develop a driver when I release a new operating system.
But again, that goes back to, there are things that a company does well and they should excel and innovate.
Yes.
And well, Microsoft just doesn't do that.
Well, they do in some respects, and then they're totally like Microsoft.
See, I see this plan, and yeah. I'm like,
this is, yeah, I agree.
This is not innovation.
This no.
This is a response to a market signal that they should have seen like years ago.
What's the differentiation between Chrome OS and Windows 11 SE? Well, largely, you know, the record states that Chrome OS, because I mean, when you get down to that level, whether it's iOS, Chrome OS, Windows SE, Windows 11 SE, whatever, what you're doing is to eliminate problems within that can be caused within the OS. You create the thing that Apple is always accused of being is a walled garden. And it is true. It is a walled garden. But what do you get from a walled garden? Well, you get stability. You get OS updates that don't crash your system. Microsoft hasn't proven they can do that at all. Google Chrome.
But that's because.
Google Android, iOS. They've proven that.
But that's because Microsoft made it the decision early on to be the operating system for everybody.
Yeah.
Versus what happened at Apple, which was, we want to be very, very meticulous about where this operating system is being deployed.
Well, and not
how
only
it's being deployed.
Not only is, but I mean, Mac OS 10 or Mac OS X is a general purpose operating system. Yes, it doesn't run on anything but Macs, but you know, users have the ability to load applications outside, and Apple's going to keep that. But when you go into like Android or and that's one of, you know, the arguments with Android versus iOS, but Chrome is this way. There's no real easy way to sideload an application within Chrome.
Yeah.
But the reason you move to that model, and it's a security model, is for OS stability, so that application developers, you can make sure that they're not putting malicious code in your system. And I'm not saying it's perfect. Things get through. But, you know, and But Microsoft is trying to take a product that's not designed to do that and lock it down. And all they're going to do is, because it's going to have a familiar interface and things, and people go to do things on it and they find out they can't, they're just going to upset their users, you know? And again, there are things that Microsoft has never proven they do well, right? I mean, look how long it took them to get sleep, resume from sleep to work on laptops reliably. I don't know how many times when I had to carry a Windows laptop around, I just quit. I would turn my whole machine off and just wait and go through the stupid boot up process. And this was back, you know, during the early SSD days, it was still going on. You know, because if you shut the lid and it was running, and there's no telling what you would get when you came back. A lot of times, I'd open my laptop back up, it'd try to restore from the, reload from the restore file that it created to save the state, and it would blue screen, and I'd have to reboot anyway. So my thing is, if I shut the lid, I actually went in and changed the setting on the button, or on the lid action. If you shut the lid, it would just turn your laptop off. Because I was going to have to reboot anyway, you know, 60 or 70% of the time. They're just getting through some of these basic things that everybody else has solved. You know, one of the things that I love about OS X or OS X, I keep saying OS X because that's what it was forever, but really it's OS 11 now. That's actually OS 12, sorry. But, is, you know, I very rarely reboot my machines because I just sleep them. And even when the battery dies, because I haven't, you know, if the battery's low and I shut it down and it stays in that sleep state, but it's been long enough that it's used all the battery up, and it goes and it saves my state to a page file. When I plug it back into power and I open it up, everything comes back consistently. Very, very rarely have I ever had an issue. When I had a Chromebook, same thing. As a matter of fact, a lot of times my Chromebook would lay on my desk because I had one of the Asus Flipbooks that was a tablet, but also a full Chromebook that did Android apps.
Yeah.
Sometimes I would forget and I would lay it on my desk and I wouldn't need it for 2-3 days and the battery would run down. And I would go and plug it back in and it would charge up and it always came back. Always came back. Even today, with like my Surface Go tablet, if I let it run down and it's in a hibernating state or sleep state, there's a good chance that I might come back to it with some issue. And if it's where it's the battery has run down, I know it will have an issue. I will have to hard reset it.
Yeah.
And that's today. That's in 2021, December of 2021. You know, we're still talking about those issues with Windows. And so they're trying to create this. Where Microsoft, the whole creative destruction is even if they want to use a similar code base to start from, they should develop a separate product. Not one, because here's the problem with Microsoft Windows 11 SE. It's another product like their ARM versions that you can't go and buy.
Yeah.
And the reason you can't go and buy it is because it only has limited hardware support. Two, because it's regular x86 hardware, if you unlock the SE part, like you do with Windows 10 and 11 in S mode, to go to like Home or Pro or whatever to gain extra functionality, you can't go back and ever reload Windows 11 SE on that device. So, you know, and I can understand why they want that forward compatibility, because say they get some school districts to buy into this concept of, okay, we have these $259 devices. As part of the school fees over a 2-year period, you know, parents are going to pay this device off. And, you know, because it only adds $100 or so per year to the school fees, which frankly is a nit. Now, school fees is a whole nother topic that Matt and I could go off on. But that being said, so it's included. And so say a child graduates from school, they don't want a laptop that's stuck in SE mode. They want to be able to move on from that. But I question the value, because you're talking about a system, and part of the reason they've locked it down and remove some applications and all kinds of stuff is because it's the lowest end hardware they can sell at the time. You're talking about a 4 gig of RAM machine. You're talking about, I think it's like 64 gigs eMMC in it. You know, it Wi-Fi 5, not Wi-Fi 6. You know, it's got limited functionality. No kid going to college. It's kind of funny. So my youngest daughter, she's a sophomore in college at an engineering school, where it's a public university in the United States, but 70% of their students are engineering students, and of the 30% left, 60% of them are hard sciences students, and then the rest is liberal arts majors and music majors and theater. You know, so this is a hard engineering and science school. And they had kids who came in last year. She was telling me this because I ended up buying her a brand new Intel-based Mac laptop so that she could run both Windows and OS X on the same machine. But what was funny is she said she was in one of her programming class, and like there were not just one or two, but there was like half the class had Chromebooks. Why did they have Chromebooks? Because they came in from high school with a Chromebook, and they thought, well, I'm a freshman in college, I'm just taking gen eds, you know, I don't need anything more than a Chromebook. They go into programming class as engineers, and it's like, you know, how do you run a compiler? How do you, you know, how are you going to, you know, run Python? Because there's no access to those, you know. Yeah. And so there was a slew of kids who, and one of them was her roommate. There was a whole slew of kids that, you know, like a month into college, they had to go buy brand new computers. So what did, you know, what was the value of having the Chromebook? What would be the value of having this locked down Windows SE? Even if you could update it, it's going to have such limited functionality just because it's so low end of the spectrum of hardware. If you upgraded it to like Windows 11 Home or Windows 11 Pro. And it's not like these were upgradable, because to keep the cost low, everything is integrated. You know?
Well, that's the other thing. This is a market that is disposable. I mean, it's...
It is. Well, and that's the other part. So
you're not going to upgrade that. Is
no.
What I'm getting at.
It's, yeah. You're,
there's no reason to make it.
Well, I liken what they're selling, because unlike Chrome OS is really lean. It's gotten a little more bloated over the last couple of years, but 4 gig of RAM on a Chrome OS box with 64 gig of storage is fine, because Chrome OS updates don't take up 30 gigs to download and then update. Chrome OS, the way it's updated, is piecemealed, so it only gets little things, snippets here and there, when security things need to be patched or new functionality needs to be added. It's maybe a couple hundred megabytes, not gigabytes. I mean, I've on low-end Windows machines with Windows 10, I remember having to like uninstall all the applications to do like Windows updates that you needed to run, because if you didn't, you were then vulnerable security-wise. You know, 64 gig SSD was not nearly big enough, and 128 is really pushing it on the edge at that point. You know, it's. I don't think it's a market I would even care about. The people who need Windows machines but they want cheaper ones can buy a decent one for $600. Look at Micro Center.
But again, though, the market that they're looking at here is poor school districts.
It is, but I would argue that in poor school districts,
in the long run, they would do better with a better machine anyway.
Yes.
I would agree with you, but I'm telling you, they're going to say we can't spend that.
So say you come in as a freshman in high school, you know, because that's really when, typically as a freshman in high school, is when school fees start to kick up, because, you know, you're taking chemistry and physics and, you know, there's disposables that, again, I don't want to go into that because it's kind of funny and it's a state-by-state thing, but a lot of state laws say that the school is supposed to provide everything a student needs to complete school. State of Michigan is that way. State of Ohio used to be that way, and they changed it back in the late 90s. Because I remember going into school and, like, you know, if you didn't have a pencil or a pen, they would, teachers would give you harassment, and I would always shoot back. Well, in Ohio law, it says XXX. And then they grumbly give me a pencil. I was not one of the kids who did that, but a lot. I won't say it never happened to me, but, it was like, but that being said, school fees have kind of gotten out of hand for required classes. But then again, if you look at the state of the way public education is funded, you can't hardly blame them for asking for school fees for
that,
some.
That changes state to state too.
Exactly. Exactly. But that being said,
I'm not upset with Microsoft for making an attempt at this market. I blame them for not having the foresight to do a quality product.
I agree.
At the right time.
Well, here's my thing. I don't know why, instead of creating a Surface like this, I don't know why they wouldn't have taken, like, their Surface Laptop Go or their Surface Go 3, and because those are $400, much better machines than spec-wise. Those are $400 or $500 machines, and go to school districts and offer them a deal where, like, if you buy these in volume, you can buy them at $400 a piece, and you're getting a full version of Windows, and, you know, and get schools to buy into the whole managing it through Active Directory and group policy and you know, because they can, now it's easy. You don't have to have all the infrastructure to do this. You do it all through Azure, which is what they're doing with Google Chrome, with Chrome OS. And say, well, look, you can justify this because if you give them to freshmen in high school, over a 4-year period, they'll have the same hardware. You'll be able to do everything they need to do, from a freshman to a senior in high school. And then, if they're freshmen in college and they still have these machines, they're still somewhat functional. This approach is the Black Friday Thanksgiving approach that a lot of people do with Windows machines, is they buy these crappy, underpowered machines, and then they throw them away the next Black Friday when they get a new one.
But that's the market. If there weren't market signals saying that there was a market for that kind of a product, Microsoft wouldn't do it at all.
Correct, but the thing is I kind of agree with they're diminishing the Surface brand with this. I would do this with the OEMs only and let Dell and them eat the cost and build this crappy and take the reputation of what, as opposed to, hey, I'm going to put out a Microsoft branded device and I'm hoping that it will be so much better than the OEM versions which it won't. It can't at the, and it, it's, there's
but
no,
they're not for that. I mean,
there's
that's
no,
not who pro- they are.
There's no profit in it.
Exactly.
Why chase something that is not profitable to you?
I mean,
particularly when the OEMs are also selling Chromebooks. HP has Chromebooks. Dell has Chromebooks. Asus has Chromebooks. Samsung has Chromebooks. You know? And some of those Chromebooks, even the Chromebooks for business that Dell has, they're nice hardware. And a lot more recyclable than, because the other thing about the Surface SE is that it's got plastic enclosure. There's nothing really recyclable in it. Some components and the screen, but it's going to end up in a landfill somewhere in Asia.
And
you got to think about that in today's environmentally charged political arena. And the politicizing of companies, this is one of the things, because even though there are a lot of, like, the sub $200 Chrome, and that's the other thing, there are sub $200 Chromebooks. There are Chromebooks that on Black Friday went for $89, and they will last 4 or 5 years running Chrome OS and any app you want to put on it just fine. And so they're still not going to meet where the market is driving to. Again, I keep saying it's, you know, it's a you're driving to zero. It'll never be zero, but at some point, you know, when the supply chain shortages and everything else stop, you're going to find Chromebooks that'll be, I have a feeling Chromebooks will eventually, there won't be anything special, but it'll be something that'll be ubiquitous with anybody, kind of like cell phones ubiquitous with people today.
Yeah.
Chromebooks will be like between $45 and $65, you know, on the low end. Now, the Chrome OS and Chromebooks through the OEMs and from Google and things, they're trying to move up in the market because there are a lot of people that all they need is Office, a web browser, and an email client. That's it. They don't need anything else. They never touch the command line. They don't program. They don't. And for those people to get a machine that works like an iPad, essentially, but is a laptop, and a lot of them have touch screens and stuff. My uncle, who is runs an electronic repair business, and he also is one of the few people who's an expert at repairing like old time watches and clocks, you know, nothing digital.
Yeah.
He uses a Asus 15.6 inch Chromebook that he paid about $400 or $500 for at Best Buy. He needed the big screen, but what does he do? The majority of what he does, he reads documentation. He saves PDFs. He has a template that works with Microsoft Office, the Android version. So he can build invoices and print them off. You know, occasionally he has to write a letter or something, so he uses Word. And, you know, the Android versions of Office are free to use without an Office 365. And even if it wasn't, it would be easy to switch it to Google Docs, which is now not, you know, Chrome OS allows you to use Google Docs offline. Full functionality offline. So it's not, I don't know, there, it's just a market that if I were Microsoft, that, you know, Microsoft myself, now I might try to create something like Windows 11 SE. Now I would do it maybe based on the code base, but be a totally separate product than the regular Microsoft Windows 11, meaning no upgrades to Windows 11. It's just a standalone product. But, because in that way you could create a leaner, meaner, something that will compete with Chrome OS on the type of hardware Chrome OS is. And instead of doing what they're trying to do, which is get a licensing fee from the OEMs and themselves when they sell one, I would give it away for free. What the value is in, oh, Microsoft's giving away and it's stable and it works and it runs on a thimble. You know, I can use 10-year-old hardware, but lock them into using Office 365 and, you know, those types of things. Okay, we beat this to death. Also, if OEMs wanted to use it on new hardware, let the OEMs take the margin position. See, that's one of the things Microsoft's always fought with the OEMs about, is...
But again, it's because they're a software company that's trying to do hardware,
yeah,
and they shouldn't. Like, gaming console is one thing.
Dell doesn't make a gaming console.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, if you're going to diversify into hardware, do a gaming console and do it right, which for the most part, they've done.
Yeah.
But stay out of markets that you're competing with your customer.
Exactly.
It's just stupid.
Well, the reason the Surface you know, came about was the idea that they released Windows 8, and Windows 8 wasn't fully baked anyway. It really wasn't until 8.1 that you got something that was kind of usable. But, you know, they were saying that, well, the reason we created the Surface was we wanted a premium experience for Windows, which none of their OEMs were doing, free of crapware, which, again, none of their OEMs were doing, and took advantage of everything that Windows could do. Like, you know, some of the things that I do like about Windows 10, like, but it's kind of, they're like kind of late to the party. Like, I think they did a great job on the Windows Hello, like if it uses your web camera, but even their own Surface products aren't consistent with Windows Hello. Like my Surface Go 2 does Windows Hello with face recognition, just like my iPhone. My newer, much newer, Surface laptop does not do Windows Hello with the video or the webcam. But it has a touch sensor on the keyboard, much like all the new Macs do. So, and that works well. But, you know, it's like, the one thing they did really well was that, you know, and now they're not consistent across their own product line. Although I do think that having the Surface is a premium experience, and Microsoft has kind of given, over time, Microsoft has given way to a less than premium experience. Again, my Surface laptop, it's a great laptop. In the price range, it is definitely a premium experience compared to other laptops in that price range. But if I really want a premium experience, I have to get a much, much higher level Surface laptop Surface Book. Again, why am I calling it a book? Because I'm trying to... But the price of that Surface Book to get that super premium feel is, I might as well buy a Mac, because you're talking the same level, and then you lose some functionality as a creator with the Windows, because Windows audio sucks, and I think it's worse in Windows 11 than it is in Windows 10, and we'll go into that in another episode, because I have some more testing and trialing to do to see if I can get it to frickin' work with an audio interface correctly. But you know, it's questionable, and you know, the thing is the reason high-end Windows laptops and workstations exist is because you have people who, either creators, data scientists, researchers, you know, who need not just a high-end system, but a high-end system that is going to last them a while. But when you start comparing hardware prices to hardware prices, that's why Apple has maintained their foothold. And Microsoft has had to bolt on things that live in that creative researcher data analytics workspace, like Windows services for Linux, which have gotten a lot better. But almost all those disciplines use Unix or Linux type systems and interface with Unix and Linux type systems. And so Microsoft had to create a way so that they could do the same thing. But it's a bolt-on as opposed to being integral to the operating system. I've always said, and I think we've discussed this on the podcast several times, if they took the Windows GUI and package system, you know, for installing applications, and they made that a desktop environment for a Microsoft distribution of Linux, they would be in much better shape than they are today, trying to keep an old code base and slap or bolt on these other items that are now necessary, you know, in the market where they actually make money with their product. Okay, I'm going to stop there. Move on to the next thing. So, a couple episodes ago, we talked about Intel was getting their ass handed to them by not just AMD, but Apple and Qualcomm. And that's still actually happening, but to a lesser degree. Since the release of their 11th and their early 12th gen processors over the last quarter, they've actually increased their desktop processor market share by 3%, which is a staggering amount when you consider where they are. So they went from 79% to 82%, and AMD's desktop processor declined to 17%, but they grew overall to 24-point-something%, and they're near their almost near-time high of 26% that they were at some point in competing with Intel. I think these numbers, though, are based upon x86 only and not all the other processor architectures that exist out there that people are using, because ARM is certainly taking over more and more and more of things that x86 used to do. But I do think it's it's surprising that they were able to make a 3% increase in a 3-month period, 90-day period. And we'll see if they continue to do that. But they just released their Alder Lake stuff. AMD had previously, before that, released their 5000 series processors. And there are things that the AMD processors do a lot better than Intel. And there are things that the Intel processors do a lot better than the AMD. So it's not one of those things. And you're also talking about the desktop processor market. You're not talking about Xeon versus EPYC. AMD EPYC is crushing Intel Xeons in the marketplace just through raw power. I was at Supercomputing 21 in St. Louis. Well, heck, it was over a week ago now because it was before Thanksgiving. 2 weeks ago, I guess. And nobody was talking about Xeon. And all the Best of Show awards came out, and all of them, there were four or five of them for AMD's Milan EPYC processors, which is saying a lot, because that's where rubber meets the road in computing, is in data analytics and compute-based research and science computing. So that was, you know, it's not like that announcement makes it go, well, Intel has now regained the market share because their product's so much better. They're still trailing in a long way. And that's why I think it's kind of interesting how their media machine is working to talk about desktop processors. Because again, desktop processors are such a small share of the market anymore of general purpose computing devices. It's all about mobile laptops, you know, or all-in-one machines that use the mobile processors and GPUs. It's only gamers are concerned about desktops where they can put discrete graphics in it or multiple discrete graphics. Or you're like me and you're a crypto miner and you care a lot about, you don't care a lot about the compute part. You care a lot about the discrete graphics processors. So all you care about is PCIe lanes and number of slots. But that's a different story. And lastly, about Christmas tech, and again, wrapped around Microsoft. So for $219, and I think this is an interesting thing, on the Microsoft Store website, you can buy a Qualcomm ARM-based Windows 11 ARM development kit. And it's essentially, it's a little 8-core Qualcomm Snapdragon processor with 4 gig of RAM, 64 gig eMMC, usual suspects, USB-C for power, regular USB LAN, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, but it's in a kind of Mac Mini form factor or Nook form factor. It actually comes with Windows 10 for ARM on it, but it's upgradable to Windows 11. And but also, interestingly enough, it's a cheap enough device. I don't think people would be doing this, but there are no returns on this product either. Microsoft is saying, well, it's a dev kit. There's no returns. Once you buy it, it's yours. I've been intrigued by it. If I have a couple hundred bucks, I might buy one. I've been wanting to do some Windows ARM development because I think that's where the future is. and it seems to be a place where Microsoft has invested, where I think, you know, we create a distraction. They realize that, and they also own companies who have a lot of expertise in ARM development. You know, they own Nokia, but they don't do phones anymore. So why would you keep Nokia around? Well, if I'm going to develop the Surface Pro X, which is their premium, most premium Surface product, is a ARM Snapdragon device, and I'm wanting to move developers into having, you know, away from x86 and onto ARM so that we can put out more ARM-based products. And we're also seeing ARM-based Windows devices from, like, HP has one that they're selling at Walmart, amazingly enough. It's a 14-inch laptop. It's like $329. Dell has a couple of ARM-based options. So we're seeing the OEMs starting to hit this market because they know that that's... x86 is probably not going to leave the server room as fast, but even there, HP for years has had the Moonshot server platform, which is all ARM based. You know, data centers and even consumer products need to go to more energy efficient, and now that the ARM processors are not only as powerful as the x86 processors, Apple has proven that, if not more powerful, but then they're so much more power efficient that I think that's a place where the industry is going to go. And it'll start on the consumer end, just like cell phones and tablets. And now we're seeing it happen in the laptop market and desktop market, because you have the Mac Mini and like this Qualcomm box, which will probably become a... Qualcomm's not going to build this and then sell it. They're going to sell it originally as a dev kit, and as they get more people who are using the machine or wanting to use software that runs on this type of machine, you'll see it upgraded and then come out as, you know, a micro desktop that somebody might buy. Also, there's lots of applications in retail for POS machines that would run, because a lot of POS software runs on Windows. Well, if I can reduce the amount of power that a POS machine, that's a point of sale, not piece of shit, but a point of sale system in all my stores across the U.S. or across the world, that is real savings in operational savings for me. So I think there's lots of places where this is going to play. Plus, it also is going to play in the auto market, because as you get embedded entertainment computer systems, a lot of them run on ARM today, but you know, now if it's running Windows, there's a lot of opportunity for other types of developers to come in and develop applications that might run in these systems. So, I mean, there's a lot of place in where I see it's going. So, Matt's falling asleep as we're talking, so we'll end it at this point. Let us know what you think. Please provide some feedback to gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. Or visit our website at www.gizmosapiens.com. And we'll see you on the digital flip side.
You've been listening to Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the digital flip side.